Parshas Vayera, why don't we start with a vort on the parsha that led to a fascinating remark by the stipler of Yaakov Yeshua Kainevsky in his Sefer Birchas Peretz. We know that out of the 10 plagues, plague number 2, of course, was Makas Tzvardeya, the plague of frogs. And we have an interesting Machlokes Rashi seems to espouse the Shita, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, recorded in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis. According to Rabbi Akiva, it was one frog, came out of the water, came out of the Nile on a nice sunny Sunday afternoon. And Tommy the Egyptian sees this frog and he says, "What's this ugly, smelly toad doing in my way?" And he gives it a little smack. And the frog miraculously divides, it splits into two, they hit it again, it turns into four, they hit it again, it turns into eight. And lo and behold, after a few hours, what do you have? You have billions of frogs running rife, rampant all throughout the land of ancient Egypt. Lachora, at first glance, Famus Gorishin, one would rather champion the opinion of the younger of Lazar Ben Azari, who says that it was one frog who popped out of the river, and he called all his buddies all over the four corners of the world, and they consolidated in this one little speck on the planet Earth called the land of Egypt. And if I saw billions of frogs gathered all from the four corners of the world, and they all happened to gather in the land of Egypt at this precise moment in time, I'd say, you know what, there's a God, a supreme Aquaman, so to speak, who is in control, who's directing all the creatures of the world. And he told them, "Hey frogs, you know what? I want you to be in the land of Egypt at this moment in time, this day. Everything would be great." And thus we can understand the stipler's remark himself in a Sefer Chayolam and Chelek Beis and Perek Tesvav, when he says that the Iker Tachlis, the primary objective, was to establish God's sovereignty, God's omnipotence, that He controlled every Bria, every creature in the world. So Lachor, apparently, I would say, let's espouse the opinion of Elazar and Azariah. Every frog gathered here in this place called Egypt, at this specific moment in time, there's a God that's controlling them. But if a frog pops out of the Nile River and I give it a little smack and it multiplies into two, I hit it again, it turns into four. Who's doing it? I'm doing it. God, who's thinking God? How do you understand, Rabbi Akiva? What in the world's going on here? Explains the stipler going as follows. What we see at play is what's called the Midah of Kas, the pejorative character trait, the negative attribute of anger. A person can become so indignant, so infuriated, ad kedekach, to the extent that one is no longer cognizant, you're not aware of what's transpiring in front of your very own eyes. Let's go back and reenact the scene. Imagine one big, ugly, smelly toad pops out of the Nile River on a sunny Sunday afternoon, and you say, "Hey, I don't like this frog, I'm going to give it a little smack," and it multiplies into two, and they start croaking incessantly, driving you insane. "Hey, froggy, will you stop that already?" Hit it again, turns into four. "Wait, will you cut that out? Stop that already." And you hit it again. "Buddy, you better stop multiplying like that." Next thing you know, these frogs are all over the place. Say, "Hey, Egyptians, I got a good idea. Why don't you wake up and smell the coffee? You know what? You meshuga, you moron. Stop hitting the frogs and you won't have a plague. You're the guys that were doing it." Ella, what's the pshat? Bal kochach, willy-nilly, you have to say as follows. This was the meat of caste that distorted their intellect to the extent they were no longer cognizant of what was taking place in front of their very own eyes. You could start hitting a frog, multiplies into two, hit it again, it multiplies into four, into eight, so on and so forth. "Hey, Egyptians, just wake up and just cut it out already." The Teretz is, the answer is, they weren't even aware. Because they were so indignant, so infuriated. I don't understand, why is God punishing them? Because they got angry because of the meat of Kas. Precisely. Because as Rav Chaim Vital, the Talmud Muvak, the primary disciple of the Arizal, writes in the beginning of a Sefer Sharei Kedusha, God doesn't just punish us based on our meisim, the actions that we do, but He takes into account our machshova as well. And yes, we have a sugya at the end of the first perek of Kedusha, in the bottom of Lamed Tesav and Beis, whether Hashem is mitzarif machshova l'maisa, does He join our thoughts to our actions? But here we see that yes, God is going to treat, if you got angry, if you had a machshova ra, there are certain instances God will mete out a punishment because of those machshovos. And the idachis on the other side of the coin, what if you use the machshava to think positively? Writes the Chai Adam in Yoni Kibbut Aveim and Klal Samach Zayin Oz Gimel. Chai Adam says that when it comes to the mitzvah Kibbut Aveim, Hashem doesn't merely demand you have to go ahead, b'maisa, b'poel, actively, go and be machabed, revere, venerate your parents, accord them the due honor. It doesn't stop there. It encompasses deeper as well. You have to speak to them. People don't know this. Mefurash Halacha and Shulchan Aruch and Yodeis and Reish Rem. If your father says something because of Yira, you're not allowed to disagree with your father. And even to agree, your father needs your haskama. "Hey, Dad, I agree with that." That's a good shot. "I need you to tell me you agree." was included. Machshava. That means in Machshava writes the Chayonim. It's an amazing chiddush that when the Torah commands us, "Kamidas Avich Ve'Simecha," it entails as well that in your Machshava, in your mindset, you have to believe that your parents are the greatest people in the world. Even if they're not chashuvim, ve'enei b'nei ha'adam, even if they're not accorded such honor in the eyes of the hamonam, of the general populace, it doesn't make a difference. You have to believe that your parents are the greatest people in the world. But what if they're really not the greatest? It doesn't matter. They're the greatest people for you. And that's included in the mitzvah kibbutz avim, that in your machshava you have to believe that your parents are the greatest. It's an interesting story of Baruch Ber Leibowitz, the Rosh Hashiva from Kamenetz, Zatzal. And it's bought in the Hebrew biographical work, Harav Adoma Lamalach. It's based on the terminology in Meseches Chagigat HaZayin Amad Beis, the parallel sugya in Moed Katan Daf Yud Zayin Amad Aleph, that you should pick for yourself a Rebbe who is Doma Lamalach Hashem Tzevokos. Your Rabbeim, your Rosh Hashivas, your Menalim should be people that you want to emulate, that you want to follow their lead, follow in their footsteps. They're Doma to Malach Hashem Tzevokos, because they're like a heavenly angel, one of God's celestial court members. So listen to the story about Rav Baruch Ber, who often was likened to a malach down here in this world. When his parents got older, he took them into his own house, and he tended to their every need. Physical, emotional needs, it didn't make a difference. He basically put in all of his kochos, all of his strengths and talents 24-7. He was honoring, he was tending to the needs of his parents. Talmidim couldn't understand. When did Rav Baruch Ber have time to learn? He's always taking care of his parents. What in the world does he have a second to learn? Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher, the Rosh Hashiva Slabodka, overheard one of the Gedolei Ador saying, "I don't understand how Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz is such an incredible Talmid Chacham. When in the world does he have time to learn? He's always doting on his parents. He's always tending to every single need, whether it's significant, picayune in nature. He is with his parents 24/7. When is he learning? Ella, what? You get a tremendous siyata d'shmaya." So the Talmidim finally questioned him, and they said, "Rosh Hashiva Rebbe, please tell me, what stirred you to become such a Mechabed Av? How do you stand out as the quintessential Mechabed Av in this generation? What you do? Where did it come from?" He says, "I'll tell you the following story." He says, "When I was visiting by my Rebbe, Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Soloveitchik family told me the following story, that when Rav Chaim was young, before he became the famous Rav Chaim on the Rambam, Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, he was little Chaikimo. That's it, he was the little Chaim. And when he was but a young lad, his father, the famous, the renowned, the Beis Halevi, took him to visit the Gadol HaDor, the Sraf Mibrisk, Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin, the Maral Diskin Zatzal. So he bought the young Chaim at the shul, and Chaim sees this nice, kishmak, comfortable chair in the big, in the front of the shul. And he doesn't know it's the Rav's chair, but hey, come on, any kid wants to sit in this nice, it's got arms and it's comfortable, it's got the little velvet on top. So he runs right away to the front of the shul before they're about to begin mincha, and he sits in the Rav's chair. This is not Stama Rav, this is the Gadol HaDor, Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin. And little Chaim Soloveitchik, 5, 6 years old at the time, there he is sitting comfortably in the Rav's seat. And the Rav, of course, with a nice disposition, with a smiling countenance, he approaches a little Chaim as they're about to daven mincha, and he says, "Tell me, are you sitting in the Rav's seat? Must be you know how to learn." Little 5, 6-year-old kid, he says, "Tell me, do you know how to learn?" He says, "Vadai, of course I know how to learn." He says, "Tell me, do you know how to learn better than the Rav? After all, you're taking over the Rav. You're usurping his power. You're taking over his chair. Do you know how to learn?" With a smile, he says, "Do you know how to learn better than I do?" He says, "Vadai, of course I do. What's the Shaila?" He says, "Tell me, do you know how to learn better than your father, the Beis Halevi?" And Chaim says, "Chas v'sholom, no way! Nobody in the world knows how to learn better than my father, the Beis Halevi." That's the Chayyada. Your father is the greatest person in the world for you. Now, there's an interesting story. We know that there's a time to be mechanech, and a father sometimes has to hit to put his child on the path. Shema Menimus Ravich Ma'atidus Tosimecha Shlomo Tosus Amishlei Perakala Posaches. Your father gives you Musar. And that's where the Maral Miprag writes in the introduction to his Derech Chaim commentary, Perkei Avos, the reason why we accord it. Why do we brand the appellation of Avos onto the ethics of the fathers? Because you're only mekabel Musar from a father. That's why all the Musar that we have comes what? In the month of? Tisha B'Av. all the isurin, the musa, the harsh rebuke, the censure, the reprimand that we receive, it comes in the month of Av, because you get musa from an Av. So an Av has to shower you with love, but there are times that he might have to go ahead and give you a little musa, give you some rebuke, reprimand, maybe it's going to be a little potch. Famous story. And granted, you can't always say the story in every context, but there was one time when a father brought his son to the stipend. And as they were waiting for the minion to conclude, the young lad was running around, causing a big ruckus, a lot of chaos, in the proximity of the famed stipler gong. So the stipler wanted to teach him a little lesson. He gave him a little patch. Gave him a little patch on the hand. And the father was beyond himself. Can you imagine the Goldador, the stipler just hit my son? What's going to be of my son? The Goldador, the stipler just gave him a little hit on the hand. Forget it. Everyone saw it. He's never going to amount to anything. Forget it. And Rav Chaim, the son of the stipler, witnessed the event. And he says, I want you to know that you have nothing to worry about. He says, let me tell you a story. This is Rav Chaim Kanevsky, one of the Gedolei Hador today. And Rav Chaim Kanevsky told over the story that when he was a young child, when he was but in his fledgling years, he was playing outside and he was throwing rocks like any young child might do. And one of the rocks went and smashed into the window of the Chozon Ish. The Golda Hador, the Chozon Ish, is sitting and shaking, he's learning by Hasmal the Rabbah. And little Chaimkel throws a rock and it smashes the window right above the Chozon Ish's Gemara. Chozon Ish, of course, doesn't waste any time. He comes outside, who's causing all the problems, and he sees it's his nephew, Chaim Kanevsky, and he calls him over and he gives him a little patch on his hand. And the sister of the Chozon Ish, married to the stipler, the mother of Rav Chaim, she's, be honest, she's astounded. She says, Chozon Ish, I never saw you hit anybody in your whole life. He says, you're right, I've never hit anybody in my whole life. But there are times in chinuch that a father, or in this case an uncle, needs to teach the child a lesson. A little patch on that. Rav Chaim Kanevsky said that whatever I am today in learning is because of that patch. Chaim Kanevsky, one of the Gedolei Hador. You have to keep in mind, he's married to Rabbi Yosef, one of the Poskei Hador's daughter. Famous story that the wife of Chaim Kanevsky, the daughter of Rabbi Yosef, and she one time went to an optician. She wanted to buy new glasses. So she asked the store owner, you know, I want to get a pair of glasses for the daytime, but I want a second pair for when it's very sunny outside. I want a pair of sunglasses. So the optician says, you know, Mrs. Kanevsky, I'll save you a lot of money. I'll just give you one pair of glasses. And it's the type that when you walk out into the sun, it automatically starts to shade. Says, yeah, I know, but my father says it might be a problem on Shabbos. My husband says it's not going to be a problem of tzaveya, of dying on Shabbos. My father says this. My husband says that. The optician says, lady, stop worrying about what your husband, what your father says. Just ask your local rabbi. Rav Chaim Kanevsky, one of the Gedolei Hador, says that it's all because of this patch. Sometimes you have to give a little musar. But that the Chayyadim is demanding of us that in our Machshava we have to believe that our parents are the greatest. Where do we see such a concept? So listen to a fascinating Yerushalmi. It's Yerushalmi in Maseches Nedarim and Paragimel. Halacha Ches. The Yerushalmi says, Lasalavo Esav is going to don the royal garb with which he was machabid, with which he went in to honor his father Yitzchak. And he's going to sit amongst the tzaddikim in Gan Eden until HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvod of Atzmo, God comes along and says, Esav, what are you doing here in Gan Eden? And Esav says, what do you mean? I did my mitzvah, keep it away. Look in my fancy clothing, look at my garments. Famous Medrash Rabbah, the beginning of Parshas told us, Amar Shem Gamliel says, Kol yomai hayisi machabed es avi v'lo echa mimeya mimasha kibed Esav es Yitzchak avi. My whole life, I served, I honored my parents. And it wasn't even one iota. Didn't even scratch the surface, not even an inkling of the amount of kibed av that Esav accorded his father Yitzchak. And the precise example that he uses to illustrate, Yisharei ani nechnosi v'begodim u'lechlochem hu nechnes v'big day malchus. I went in, whatever I was wearing today, I went to serve my father, to bring him dinner, to bring him a slice of pizza. But every single time that Esav went in to honor his father Yitzchak, he donned royal garb. So there he is in Gan Eden, and he's wearing these royal garments, and he says to God, I did the mitzvah, keep it of aim. Rav Shimon Leal even testifies, nobody did keep it of aim like an Esav. And Hashem says, that's not true. You were deficient in one area. What was that area? Well, we know what happened in the wake in the aftermath of Esav losing the brachos, the birthright to Yaakov, and then Yaakov using the deceit, the duplicity to steal the blessings from Esau. The pasuk says, "Vayistam Esav as Yaakov ochav." He hated it. He detested him. Vayomer Belibel. The pasuk concludes, and he said, he uttered to himself. There was a soliloquy here. The Torah is testifying that Esav said to himself, "Yikervu yimei v'lavi v'hergas Yaakov achay." I can't wait for my father to die, and then I could kill Yaakov. I'm not going to have the chutzpah, the audacity, to kill my brother Yaakov when my father Yitzchak is still alive. Oh, but I can't wait. I'm davening that Yitzchak, my father, should die so that I can thereby be enabled to finally do away with my brother Yaakov. Hashem quotes this very pasuk as testimony that Esav, you were lacking. You were sorely deficient in your kibud av. What do you mean? What was he missing? You know what he was missing? Like the chayodim, it's beautiful. He was missing the machshava. He never said anything to Yitzchak. But Lamaisa Achareke Chosakol, in his heart, he was thinking and hoping, longing that his father should meet an untimely demise so that he can then kill his brother Yaakov Avinu. Hashem says, Kibud Av Ve'Aim is in Maisa, it's in Dibur, and it's even in Machshava. In fact, there's a fascinating medrash that Rosh Chodesh Hadron, he writes, when he was writing the Lev Eliyahu, the three-volume work on Chumash by Rav Eliyahu Lopian, in the footnotes of Parshas Vayeschanan, he says, I couldn't find the Medrash. It's an obscure Medrash, but the Chassam Sefer brings it in the Sefer Chassam Sefer HaChodesh and Parshas Vayechi. I saw the Bayana Rebbe also brings it in the name of the Abdur of the Oy of Yisrael. Listen to this medrash. We have a Gemara in Sota Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph that says that Esav tried to prevent Yaakov from being interred, from being buried in Maaseh Machpelah in the cave of the patriarchs. But the medrash goes one step beyond the Gemara. The medrash says that when they brought Yaakov to the opening of the cave of the patriarchs, Esav stood at the entrance and he says with brazenness to his brother Yaakov, "I want you to know, Yaakov, I'm going with you to Gan Eden, or you're going with me to Gehenna." And Yaakov answers back, "Ani avticha v'ata saneta oti." I loved you and you hated me. That's the medrash. Pretty obscure. Pretty enigmatic. Explains the Chassam Sofer as follows. There's a dispute amongst the Rishonim. How many mitzvahs do you have to fulfill to get a ticket into Olam Haba, into the next world? According to many Rishonim, you have to observe all 613. How are you going to get to 613? So the Mabit in Kiryat Sefer provides a number of terutzim. You have to love every other Jew. You have to love the Kamocha, Kol Yisrael, Rivim Zebazeh, Sanhedrin Mambalat. If you love everybody else, you connect with them, you get their mitzvahs. Many different explanations how we understand such an opinion. But Shitas HaRambam, of course, in the famous Pirush Mishnayos at the end of Maseches Makos, at the top of 23b, on the Mishnah of Hananiah and Akasha, Omer Ratzah, Kodesh Baruch Hu Lezakos, this is all the Fikah, Kevon, and Torah Mitzvahs. What schus is it, asks the Rambam, that God gave us so many mitzvahs, myriad mitzvahs, 613, so many mitzvahs. You know why it's a schus, writes the Rambam? You have 613, which are really thousands of opportunities to ultimately get to do one mitzvah, bishleimuta. If you do one mitzvah with its entirety, bishleimus, you also get a ticket to Olam Haba. So Esav tainas, he claims to Yaakov, "I did the mitzvah, keep it over, so I go with you to Gan Eden." And if you hold like the opinion that you have to perform all 613, you were missing the 22 years of keep it over, Megillah, Daf Tazayin Arvei, all those 22 years that you were missing, you were away from your father, from Yitzchak, so you didn't do all 613. So if you hold like the opinion, you do all 613, you're going with me to Gehenna. Yaakov responds, really, we say ideally, we're choshesh, we're suspect, even for the opinion in the Rishonim, you have to do all 613. But I never stopped loving you, and since I loved you, I connected to your mitzvahs, I got your mitzvahs, but you hated me, you don't get my mitzvah, I go to Gan Eden, you go to Gehenna. So you see again, Esav thought that he did the mitzvah b'shleimusa. Because, hey, I did it b'maisa, I did it b'dibor. Look at the way I spoke to Yitzchak. The Torah itself is testimony that why did Yitzchak love him? Kitzai b'fid. Look at the way that he speaks. Look at the questions that he asks. Look at the chokhmah, the questions that he posed. Rav Yonasan Eifshitz even writes in two places in Yaros Devash, you know why Esav's head belonged in Maaseh Machpelah? Because even though his body sinned, but his head was filled with Torah. And because of that, his head can roll off and be embraced and cradled b'cheikel shel Yitzchak in Maaseh Machpelah ad hayom. You did it to Esau and my son. You did it in Debor. But you were sorely deficient when it came to Machshava. You have to believe that they're the best people in the world for you. So practically speaking then, how does one go about honoring one's parents? Well, you saw in the Sefer HaChinuch and Mitzvah Lam and Gimel that the shorsh, the foundation, the bedrock of this mitzvah is one of Hakaras HaTov, of expressing your overwhelming sense of gratitude. Your parents raised you. They brought you into the world and they gave you an upbringing. You owe them Hakaras HaTov. You owe them big time. I remember seeing a caricature in the Wall Street Journal years ago. A father calls over his son. He says, son, you're 21 years old now. I made a calculation. You owe me exactly $126,865. Pay up time. You know how much money parents put into raising a child? You know how much a curse of tov you owe to your parents for bringing you into the world, for raising you? Right? So Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva Negros Moshe, and Yoredei and Chelek Beis and Simon Kuf Lamed, even when it comes to a ger. We know that if somebody converts, the Gemara tells us, Yevamos, the bottom of 22a, Gershon Iskari, Kikotan Shinol Adami, five times in Chas, a person who converts is not halachically tied to his biological parents any longer. And yet still, writes Moshe, you have to go in and show them respect. Why? Because it's all about a Hakaras HaTov, like you saw in the Sefer HaChinuch. And even though they're not halachically defined as your parents any longer, but they raised you, they brought you to the world the same way adoptive parents. You owe them, and you owe them big time. And you have to be Makir Tov to them. And a Hakaras HaTov, we know, is not just for the other person, for the one on the receiving end. It's first and foremost for you. Chaim Shmulevitz writes in Sichas Musa, you know why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't perform the first three plagues? Because the water, after all, saved him, rescued him when he was placed into the Teva in the Yam. And the sand, the ground he used to cover over the Egyptian that he had struck, that he killed. Hakaras HaTov. Ask some Chaim Shmulevitz, understand this. We're talking about inanimate objects. What are you going to do? You're going to show gratitude? Hey, sand, water, thank you so much. We have institutions for people like that. What are you being makir tov to the water, to the sand for? The idea is, explains the Chaim Shmulevitz Atzal, because a Hakaras HaTov is first and foremost for you. You need to do it for you. Chacham Tzvi writes in the Tshuva and Simon Chavav, you know why you're not allowed to steal from another individual? Not because Hashem cares so much about the money of another individual, it's because He cares so much about you. If you're someone who steals, Chalila, God forbid, from another individual, it's not because God says, I care so much about the money of another individual, but you're destroying your own tchudas and nefesh, your own midos. You're bringing in negative attributes, pejorative character traits. I care about you. You have to be makir tov to your parents because it's necessary for your own growth. That's a Hakaras HaTov. Even if it's a ger, and even as Rav Yonah Metzger, the chief rabbi, writes in the Shal Shishuvis Miyam Aloch and Chelik Beis and Simad Yud Zayin, Rabbi Yoshev in Akutras Mavakshe Torah in volume 23 on Inani Kibbut Abayim, he also writes the same idea. What if a person's father, Rachmana Litzlan, is blind? So what are you going to do? You're going to go and stand up for your father? You're going to go and show him a lot of respect? What if he's blind? What if Chas v'Shalom, a person has a parent who's suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia, and they're not aware, they're not cognizant of what you're doing for them? Now, granted, there's always the suspicion, as Rav Sturmach writes in Shas HaShuvas, Shuvas Van Hogas, there's the suspicion. We don't know exactly, even a person in dementia and severe Alzheimer's, we don't know, maybe they are still aware of something. But let's say you knew with utmost certainty that your parent, Rachmana Litzlan, was suffering in such a fashion, and they weren't aware of what you're doing. You still have to take care of them, and you still have to honor them. Why? Because it's not just for your parents, it's first and foremost for you. You need to show that Hakaras HaTov. Even if it doesn't always make sense. You started off this morning with a fascinating episode recorded for us on the bottom of 31a in Maseches Kedushin, the story of Dama ben Asina. Ask the Gemara, Heichan Mitzvah Kibud Avei. Now let me ask you a question. Do we learn halachas from Goyim, from the non-Jews? Of course not. Explains to the Pnei Yeshua and others, we're asking how great is this schar, the reward for Kibud Avei. So we have this famous Gentile by the name of Dama ben Asina, and the sages need a stone, a precious jewel for the ephod. And his father's got one, but of course his father's taking a nap and the key is underneath the pillow. I'm not going to wake up my dad. And in the end, he doesn't wake up. He says to the Chachamim, what can I do? I'm sorry, Lashon HaCheres, but the very next year, a Pora Aduma, one of those extremely rare red heifers, is born into Dama Ben Asina's flock. And of course, the Chachamim are ready to pay a handsome sum, an exorbitant price tag for the Pora Aduma. And this righteous Gentile says, no way, I don't want to take a penny more than I lost last year. And the transaction's complete. Oh, look at Dama Ben Asina. So we're now learning out halachas from Goyim. Let me ask you a question. If you know your father's got a $1 million deal, and a guy knocks on the door and he says, I got a tip, this stock, I'm telling you, get into Google before it shoots up to 500. I can get him into this stock at the right time. Uh-oh, my dad's sleeping. What? Your dad finds out, you blew the deal. You could have gone him into General Motors on the day it opened at 33, and it shoots up to 35 plus, and you could have gone your father into General Motors at the beginning, and you didn't wake him up, and he missed it. Your father's going to shoot you. What are you, Meshuggah? You didn't wake me up? So halacha mice, of course, if you know, if there's an umdana, if you know with utmost certainty that your father certainly wants to be woken up for the deal, then of course you wake him up. So what are we bringing in Dama Ben Asina? You know what we're bringing in? Explains the Pnei Yeshua and others. Look at the schar. Look at the schar. It's a big deal. I'll honor my father, so I'll get a red heifer. Get a Pora Aduma. What's a Pora Aduma all about? Why is that the reward? God always works mida kenegan mida, measure for measure, so why didn't God just give him another jewel, another diamond? How about a briefcase of $1 million just falling down from the sky? You know, Shlomo Freifeld, the Rosh Hashiva and Shai Yoshev Zatzal, he used to say that even in the winter, he used to drive down the Venwick Expressway with his windows open, because he always got and the yeshiva needs money. Says, I always had to know that I was doing my ishtalus. So anytime I was driving down the road, maybe there's going to be a Brinks truck, one of these trucks, the armor trucks carrying money from a bank, and just maybe it'll break down in the middle of the van, wake, and the money will explode all over the place, and the bags are going to go flying. But if my windows are closed, there's no way for the money to come in. Now that I open up the windows, maybe it'll come in. You have to do your ishtalus. So God could have done anything for him, though. He did his ishtalus. He did an amazing mitzvah. So give him another jewel. Give him another diamond. Give him a briefcase of a lot of money. What's he giving him a red heifer for? In his introduction to this small work, Hilchos Kibarav Emarabu Rabbi David Yosef, working with his father's halacha scattered, bandied about Yaakov Yosef, Rav David Yosef, in the introduction, he writes as follows. What's unique about Pora Aduma? Pora Aduma is the quintessential chok. This is the paradigmatic statute that tells us, as the wisest of all men, Shlomo writes, Amarti Yechkem Avihiru Chokim. I thought I understood the Torah. This taught me, you know what? I understand Gordish. I don't know anything at all. Pora Aduma. This teaches us that even the mitzvahs that we think we understand, even the mishpatim, you know what? You don't really understand anything. And yes, like Rosal Avichik writes in Reflections of the Rav in Volume 2, of course we could suggest, and we should suggest reasons, and we should probe, and we should delve ever deeper and try and elucidate the underpinnings of every single mitzvah, but we have to accept at the end we can't fully understand everything. Pora Aduma, according to Rashi, the end of Mishalach, was given to us already in Mora before we made our way to the Piedmont of Sinai. Why would we have Pora Aduma before we got to Har Sinai? Pora Aduma is only once you have a Mishkan, when you erect the grand edifice called the Tabernacle, then you could talk about a Pora Aduma. What do you need a Pora Aduma before you got to Sinai for? Explains the Soloveitchik, and explained already the Sam Sefer, the Klei Yakor of Yaakov Kamenetsky. The way you have to approach Matan Torah is, you're about to hear 613 mitzvahs. And you're going to say to yourself, oh, this one makes sense, this one's rational, this one I like, this one I don't like. The introduction, the preface to Matan Torah is Pora Aduma. Pora Aduma teaches us we don't really understand anything. You know why you have to do all the mitzvahs? Because God told you to do the mitzvahs. That's it. Because it's a chok. Gezerahim alafana vein lacha reshus lahara chareh. Brochus taflamad gimlamad beis, megillah chafeyim and aleph. The midos of al koshuch ein and rachamim el gezerah say. That's Pora Aduma. And explains Rabbi David Yosef. Dama Ben Asina taught us, even though we might not paskin like that incident, halacha lemaisa, but he taught the world the proper perspective when it comes to kibud av ve'em. You have to view it, you know why I'm doing it? Even if it doesn't make sense, I'm doing it because Hashem was metzaveh. Because I'm doing it because I have to. Intellectually, yes, he didn't even have a Torah, but he knew intellectually that this made sense. It was rational, it was sensible, it's a mitzvah sikli. And I have to show my father respect, I'm not going to wake him up. So you know how God illustrates, why is it in the pages of Agamar? Because what was the media? Can I get me?
measure for measure a red heifer, paraduma, which itself is a mitzvah that makes absolutely no sense. To tell us he viewed the mitzvah kiravim as if it didn't make any sense, but he did it anyway. That's how we should view kiravim. And that's the Aruch HaShulchan that you saw this morning. Writes the Aruch HaShulchan, why don't we make a mitzvah, a bracha, on the mitzvah kiravim? So many different explanations about. We have an Avodrom, we have the Tshuvas HaRashba, the Chelek Aleph, and Simon Yerches, the Reb and Polat, ask the Ravid, certain mitzvahs, Kamila Sasson, and Nikar Cholon, Kibin Avayim, we don't recite a bracha, and writes the Rashba, because we know the halacha is Avsha Mochla Kvodo, Kvodo Mochla. If a father wants to pardon his honor, he can. Usually the son should say, Dad, what can I get you for dinner tonight? If the dad says, look, I'm going out, should I get you a pie of pizza? No problem. He can be Mochla on his cover, he can pardon it. And therefore you can't make a bracha because you'll recite a blessing. And if you recite a blessing, he might say, I don't want you to do the mitzvah. And it was a bracha levatal. That's why the mitzvah stuck. What are you going to do? You're going to make a bracha. The poor person is going to say, the destitute individual is going to say, I don't want the money. You made a bracha levatal. The Or Zeruah writes in Hilchas Berchas Amotzi, that since it's a mitzvah tzvidus, it's 24-7, 365, it's all the time this mitzvah. Any mitzvah that you have to do all the time, chazal were not koveya, a nusach ha-brocha, because a brocha means it's special. I'm doing it now at a special time. Kiramim is continuous. It's all the time, 24-7. And not like the old Stephen Wright joke, where he said he got up in the middle of the night, he was dying of thirst, he went out to the local supermarkets, and he gets there, and 3 o'clock in the morning, the guy's locking up, and he wants a cold Diet Coke, and he says to the guy, but there's a sign that says open 24 hours. The guy looks at me and says, not in a row. Kibbutz of Aim is what? It's 24-7, 365. Kibbutz of Aim is continuous. It's got to be done all the time. So that you want to menasei chanusach habrocha. And then we have the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, and Simon Rei Shemem and Yoradei and Sevdalad, there are those who ask, why do we make a bracha on this mitzvah? So we saw the Rashba, we saw the Avodah, we saw the Arzur, the Stechemin brings down two Terutzim, there's a Kol Yaakov, a Shom Avraham, many other Terutzim, right? The Aruch HaShulchan. You know what's different? Because this is something that even the Goyim do, the Yomus Olam do it, the nations of the world, the Gentiles, they also perform Kibbutz of Aim. What better proof than Dama Ben Asina, Kedusha Laman Aleph? They're also doing it. Any mitzvah that even the Goyim do, it doesn't show it's miyuchad to Yidden. It's not special to Jews. Because the nations, well, they also understand it's a mitzvah sikli. Intellect demands to show that overwhelming debt of gratitude to your parents. They do it too. We're not going to make a bracha. And this fits so beautifully with what he told us earlier, the Aruch HaShulchan, that even though the archetypal mitzvah that makes sense, that can easily be rationalized, Kibbutz of Aim is right there under the spotlight. This is the classic mitzvah sikhli. Lu Yitzur theoretically had the nap in the Torah, you would know instinctively, yes, I owe my parents tremendously. You know why you should honor them? Not because you're driven purely by a karas hatov. Not because you feel you owe them, and we're not going to get into today the machlokes between the Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber, and the Ramah based on Machlokes Ramam and the Balei HaTaisis. What if the father's a Rosha? Do you then have to be Machaber? Writes the Aruch HaShulchan, and it's an idea echoed by Rav Yitzchak Voloshin in the Sefer Pekodosh, by the Marit in his Rosh Hashanah, and his Panech, Pashas Yisro, Dush Aleph, and by the Ksav Sofer as well. And Perakei Parshas Veshon, and the Torah says, Kavi Yesavich Vesemecha Kashet Sivcha. What do you mean, Kashet Sivcha? Every mitzvah that we do is because Hashem commanded us to do the mitzvah. Why this Hadgoshim Yuchedet, this emphasis, this emphatic tone that you're going to honor your parents? Why, Kashet Sivcha? Because I commanded you. Right, Storuch HaShulchan, you know why you're doing it? Not because it's a mitzvah sikhli. Not purely because, hey, it makes sense, it's sensible, it's rational, it's intellectually, it sits well with me, I'm doing it. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you got to do it. That's why, Kashet Sivcha, because God said to do it, that's why I'm doing it. It's the famous Maisa of Rav Leibel Eger, a grandson of the renowned, the illustrious Rav Akiva Eger, who was known as the Masnagid. Rav Leibel Eger went off into Chassidus. Nebuch, he went off to Derech. That's how they felt in that day and age. Now, he became amazing. He wrote Svarim, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. How did Rav Leibel Eger, growing up in the house of the Eger Mishpacha, with the Zaydi called Rav Akiva Eger, how did he become a Chassid? So the story, they say, is he went to
spent Yom Teruah by Kutsk. And he was by the Kutsk Rebbe, and they had a break in Yom Kippur, even in Kutsk, they had a little break. And in the break, two Hasidim came over to this new guest, this label. And they said to him, "No, Rabbi Yid, a label. Let's mach l'chaim, let's have a l'chaim." Like he says, "I don't understand, it's Yom Kippur today. It's Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink. You're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink. Don't you know it's Yom Kippur?" I remember in Eretz Yisrael, I was in a store one time, the day after Yom Kippur, and one secular Jew said to the other, "Oh, this was my best Yom Kippur, and I fasted. I just had a few cups of tea, but I fasted. It was great." Not everybody knows. But I'm dealing with Hasidim here. And he turns to Hasidim and says, "It's a mafurish halacha and shulchan aruch. You're not allowed to drink on Yom Kippur. You guys don't know halacha. You don't know shulchan aruch." So they say, "Stop with all the chumras. Stop with all the stringencies label. Come on, let's mach l'chaim. A little shot of whiskey, a little bit of gin, a little rum. Go, let's have a little l'chaim in the middle of Yom Kippur." And they take out the wine glasses, the shot glasses, and they're about to pour. And he says, "I understand, don't you know what's before Shalach?" And he's quoting them this sif and Shulchan Aruch, and the Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch, and the poskim. And he's going, and he says, "I understand, you guys don't know halacha." And they're saying, "Stop with all the stringencies, with all the chumras." And they're pouring, and they're about to make a shahako, and they're about to bring it to the lips. And he's mamish indignant, he's infuriated. He says, "I don't understand. God says you can't drink on Yom Kippur." Oh, now he's learning. It's not the Shulchan Aruch says you can't drink on Yom Kippur. It's because God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says you can't drink on Yom Kippur. Keep it up, aim, it's sichli, it makes a lot of sense. I'm going to do it because it's rational, because it's about a Karsa Tov. You know why you're going to do it? Because God told you got to do it. That has to be the outlook. That's the gisha, the approach to keep it up, aim. And thus, a lot of interesting questions come up. Halacha l'maisa. What if a person's parents say you can't go to Israel? You want to go learn in Eretz Yisrael, and your parents say you can't go. So we know it's a big machlokes. Ramban, Rambam, three different opinions in Shitas Rambam. Does the Rambam agree? The Avinezer, he agrees to Ramban. Then is Deraisa? Is it a mitzvah at all? Megillas Estherites, maybe not. Maybe it's a mitzvah to Rabbanon. But according to Kamat, all the Rishonim, there's a mitzvah today, some type of mitzvah today for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to settle Eretz Yisrael. Writes the Shalosh Teshuvos Divrei Chachamim in the beginning of Perek Tes and Yana Yoredeo. What happens if your parents say you can't go to Israel? Do you have to listen to them? Writes Rav Scheinberg, well, L'chaira, we have, you saw it, in Yoredeo and Shulchan Aruch Siman Reishimem. And Sif Yud Gimel, the Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam, the Gemara Megillah Tesayin of Adbeis. Yaakov wasn't punished for the 22 years. 22 years he was punished for, but not the 14 years. He sat diligently in the yeshiva Shem and Eber, because for learning in, especially for learning in Eretz Yisrael, you're not mechuyev to listen. But qualifies Rav Scheinberg, if a person's parents are elderly, or you might cause them physical harm, they might suffer as a result, and it becomes a real shayt. It's not so pushet then, even for yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. And even though you're right, ordinarily for learning, if a person wants to learn in one yeshiva, and your parents say that's not a good yeshiva, so there is a machlokas from Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shach, and Shutev, and Chachamim. At what age are you allowed to make the decision on your own? But lamaisa, as the Piskei Tshuva writes, quoting the Chamudi Daniel, even if you're in doubt, if you feel one yeshiva is better for you, it might even be docha, keep it away. Or what about when it comes time to getting married? If you find a beautiful girl, in Ruchnius, in Gashmius, and you want to marry this girl, and your parents don't like the shidduch for some reason, are you mechuyev? Are you obligated to listen? The very last halach in Yoredeo Siman Reishmem and Sifchafei, based on a tshuva by the Maharik, if a person finds the right girl, finds the right spouse, you're not obligated to listen to your parents. However, if it's a person that's not good for you, that's a different story. Then it's Siv therefore writes in his tshuvas and Meshiv Dover and Simon Nun, the Tshuva Sadeshin and his tshuvas and Simon Mem. If it's not a girl that's good for you, then granted, there might be instances, extenuating circumstances, when parents certainly do have an input. But the Ramah Paskins, based on the Marik, if you know this girl is good for you, you're allowed to go ahead and marry her, even if your parents don't 100% approve. The Meshech Chochma, Rameya Simcha from Divinsk, and Parshas Vayera brings a proof and says, Eliezer was made to swear by Avram Avinu, "I don't want you to take from the daughters of Ches, the daughters of Canaan, to wed my son Yitzchak." Ask the Meshech Chochma. So what do you have to make him swear? Just go over to your son Yitzchak and say, "Yitzchak, you can't marry this and this girl." Ella, you know why he couldn't do it? Because Yitzchak would not have had to listen. He would not have been bound to listen. But again, it has to be that the woman is a good type of girl. As a Lavush, as the Jewish Marshtam and Simon Sanihei writes, when it comes to whom you're going to build a house with, to build a Bayis Nema of Yisrael, you might know better than your parents.